Tschüss.
In Perik Chaf, excuse me, no, Perik Yutes. Start from Chaf Tes. Vayi b'shacheis Elokim esori hakikar. And it was when God destroyed the cities of the plain. Vayisker Elokim es Avraham, and God remembered Avraham. Vayishalach es Lot mitoch hafecha. And he sent out Lot from amidst the destruction. Bapoch es Arim, when he destroyed the cities. Asher yoshev behein Lot, that Lot lived in. Alright, now then it goes into the story of what happens next, well, with Lot and his two daughters, and how they conspire to get him drunk and to conceive a child by him. We'll be taking that up. That's what I want to get into. But what's strange about this pasuk? Take a look at the pasuk Chaf Tes itself. Yeah, and tell me if you can spot what's strange about it.
But what do you mean?
Words like this. The obvious question is that the words Vayisker Elokim es Avraham is out of place. And God remembered Avraham. What does it have to do with Lot? The intent, the objective of the pasuk is to tell you that Lot was saved as a result of God's decision to save him. But what does that have to do with remembering Avraham? It has nothing to do with that. We have not seen anywhere that it has anything to do with Avraham. God didn't promise Avraham that he would save him or anything like that. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, what is the remembrance of Avram have to do with Lot? So he says, Niskar Shaya Lot Yodea Shesara Ishto Shal Avram. God remembered that Lot knew that Sarah was the wife of Avram. Vishama Sha'amar Avram of Mitzrayim. And he heard Avram say in Mitzrayim, Al Sarah Achosihi. He heard Avram say that Sarah was his sister. Below Gila Adava, and he didn't reveal the matter. Shayachas Alav, because he had mercy on him. That is to say, that Lot had mercy on Avram. Leficha Chas Hakadosh Baruch Hu Alav. Therefore, God had mercy on him. Okay, so according to Rashi, that's the relevance. Now, what's difficult about Rashi? What's the problem with this? In other words, he didn't reveal the fact when they went down to Mitzrayim. So Lot was with him, and Lot knew, he had heard that he made up this ruse, this story. And he kept it quiet. He could have gone and told.
Well,
in other words, according to Rashi, Rashi holds that he solved the problem. But the question is, what does it mean? What did God remember about Avraham that caused him to save Lot? That's his question. His answer is that he remembered the plight that Avraham had found himself in when he had made up a secret that said Sarah was his sister, and Lot knew the secret, and Lot could have given him away and had him destroyed, and Lot had mercy on him and didn't do it, so therefore God had mercy on Lot. Now the whole thing fits in. My question is, it doesn't seem to me that merely refraining from giving away Avraham would be such a tremendous merit that he deserves to be saved from destruction. Yes, certainly, if it's true. It is true. In other words, you're right. Had he given Avram away, that would have branded him as a terrible Russia. But is your premise that, in other words, if I can do a tremendous rishus and I refrain from doing it, does that make me a tremendous tzaddik? Does that necessarily follow? If I have the button to start a nuclear war and wipe out a whole country, and I don't do it, does that make me a great tzaddik? I don't know if that's the two necessarily follow. I mean, to have given away Avraham would have been a very, very despicable for no reason. I mean, Avraham was a good was his uncle, and he was a very important person to him. He helped him out. They lived together, etc. And to give away would have been a terrible, despicable thing. So he didn't know. He didn't do something which would have been a terrible, despicable thing, and it didn't cost him anything. It doesn't seem to me to be an example of tremendous sitkus over here.
Would he have gained anything by giving away?
In other words, would I take it though that without the Maram, you're agreeing that the question is a good question? That's all I want to know. It's a valid question. reason why I think it's a good question is because according to the natural order, Lot should have been destroyed because he's part of Sodom and Gomorrah. So it was only because of the intervention. So he was worthy of a miracle. Now that itself is a question: why was he worthy? So either the Torah could tell us or not tell us, but the Torah chooses to tell us.
Right.
And Rashi gives us a reason now. So that we have to do is we have to see that there's something big going on over here. Something otherwise, why would Rashi tell us? If Rashi held like you that this is something that we don't know, even in a general way. I'm not saying, see, when you say midah keneged midah, I don't mean the problem. See, I'm not interested in the particular of midah keneged midah. Midah keneged midah, we always say that when God punishes, it directly relates to the chait. So you have to try and figure out how does one thing relate to the other. Here I'm not interested in the particular. I'm just saying in general terms, Rashi's saying that for what he did in Mitzrayim, he deserves to be saved. Like, this is a fantastic thing. As I'm questioning, it doesn't seem to me to be that terrific a deed to warrant that a person should be saved who otherwise was part of a group that should have been destroyed. In other words, I'm still questioning, what is such an act of heroism, such an act of greatness? He was close to him and this and that. I mean, like, the mere fact that you don't give away, that you don't give, he didn't do anything for him. It didn't cost him anything. Now, the Rambam wants to say that really he could have made a lot of money on this. It would have been a tremendous benefit. It was a tremendous temptation. Now, you could say that. I question that. I don't see where that's so clear. Because, my question is, power could have taken over that wealth. Who says that Lot would have gotten? All right, so you'll say Lot would have gotten a little reward for telling him. Maybe so. It doesn't convince me. I don't think it's that, I don't think it's efficient in and of itself. That one thing, that one time in the Mitzrayim, Moshe, either like Jake says, either the guy was really not worthy of being saved. If that's the case, that one thing in the Mitzrayim, I don't see that that's such a big deal. I really don't. On the other hand, if you're going to say that he was really a good person and he deserved to be saved because he was a good person, so then how does this incident fit into the picture? So then this incident is really extraneous and it's irrelevant. You know what I mean? Let me put the question in a different frame. Well, how are we supposed to understand the significance of this incident? This action of Lot's? Is this the reason why he was saved? Is this the thing why he was saved? I mean, to say like Jake says, like the guy is really not worthy of being saved, but the one time he didn't give away the secret, that's it. Well, no. Really he was saved because he had good qualities, he had good virtues. And he was worthy of being saved, right? As we see, he practiced hospitality and so on and so forth. If that's the case, so why may his God come as Abraham? Well, who cares about that thing in Mitzrayim? That's part of the journal. That's one particular which was part of his personality. He was a nice person. And we see bigger things than that. I mean, it's also, but we see bigger things than that. We see, so that was chesed. That was chesed to Abraham. but we see bigger things than that then. Cite the case where he was protecting the strangers, where he gave up his, he was fighting with the strangers, where he was willing to give up his own daughters. All right, he had a mistaken notion about sexual morality. But as we said, within his frame, he was only doing it to protect them. So you strike that from the record. Before that point, they were breaking down his house. He jeopardized his whole position over there. He says, who are you? You're a stranger, and now you're going to judge us? That certainly seems to be a much greater demonstration of righteousness than what he did in Mitzrayim. What he did in Mitzrayim does not really impress me that much. It's not such a great, like I said, if a person has the opportunity, a person can, if I have a secret, I have some knowledge which could destroy you financially or destroy you in another way, and I refrain from giving it away. So that makes me, the fact that you can't, the righteousness of the person, there's no ratio over here. In other words, I didn't prevent you a great harm. So every time I drive down the street and I don't run you over, I become a big tzaddik. I mean, the mere fact that I could have done a great harm to you, so you'll say, I didn't do it because I'll get caught. I didn't do it because I'll get caught. So you mean, any time I'm in a situation where I can kill another person and not get caught, and I refrain from killing them, this makes me into a tremendous tzaddik. I just don't see that the two go together. I want to say that the Maisa with Abraham is not taken as a separate thing in and of itself, but it adds, it modifies, it gives us an insight into the whole character of Abraham. I want to turn to another Rashi. So, take a look. Go back to Pasuk Yud Zayin. Right, the famous command of the Malachim, Al Tabit Acharecha. Do not look back. All right, do not look back. Of course, the question is, why were they commanded not to look back? So take a look at Rashi. Al Tabit Acharecha. Ato Hirshata Imohem. You sinned with them. Ubeschus Avram Atanitzol. And it is only because of the merit of Avraham that you are being saved. Ein chakadai liros bipuranusam v'atanitzol. You are now worthy to witness, to see their punishment, and while you are saved. While you are saved. Now, according to Rashi, the command not to look back here is addressed to Lot. To Lot. Now, what's your reaction to this, the Rashi? Does this Rashi...
It's just to Lot.
Well, I mean, it's not, excuse me, in point of fact, it's not. It's Lot and his whole family. But it has specific significance for Lot, according to Rashi.
Right. But
I mean, we always learned that basically it was because of the Lot's wife,
right,
who was the in-between, the type of character. Yeah. But Rashi's learning applies to Lot, too. Rashi's going in from a completely different angle over here, in the sense that it applies to Lot also.
Well,
now, I'm saying, analyze the Tom. Does it make any sense to us? What's questionable? What's problematic?
There's a contradiction here.
It's a contradiction.
Right.
Why is it a contradiction?
Because over here it says it's exclusive loss by...
One problem is, as Jake points out, that in the first Rashi we said that Lot was saved basically on his own schus, because he didn't give away Avraham. Here, Al Tav Lecharecha, it's saying that he's not being saved because of his own schus, but because of the schus of Avram. That's one problem. Any other problems?
Also, it says Atah
Rasha Imah. Yeah, Atah Shat Imah. So that contradicts. You're a Rasha, and you're only being saved because of Avram. That's the same. What's the kasha? That's part of the first kasha. But this, what are the problems that this Rashi poses for us? Analyze the Rashi. Break it down. No, Danny.
Yeah, no, there's a justice. The guy's a Rasha.
Exactly. The most difficult thing is the very concept that Rashi is putting forward. Forget about everything else. Where do we find that this is part of our system of justice? That for one person sins, and he's saved, he deserves to be killed, like everybody else, and he's saved because of the merit of Avraham. It doesn't need to be just. I mean, Avraham is a tzaddik, so Avraham gets his reward. But you mean to tell me that in our system a person can be saved, his own fate will be determined purely because of his relationship to others?
Yes,
possible.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because,
okay.
We always say...
Avi Yar is saying that my question is not really valid, because we say Kichol D'Rachav Mishpat, that in God's justice takes into account all of the various factors. As opposed to human justice. In human justice, you can only deal with a certain limited set of factors, and you may decide that this person is guilty for what he's done, but there are other, it's intertwined, it's going to be harmful to others, it's going to cause a great deal of harm to his children or to his parents, other people that are innocent, but a human judge can't deal with those phenomena. But when God enacts justice, God does it in a way that everybody gets his due. That's called the Rachav Mishpat. Okay. So you want to say, therefore, that it is possible. I mean, I don't know if it goes that far. It's possible, therefore, that really...
Abraham thought enough, and the Ramban mentioned that Abraham thought enough of love.
I hear what you're saying. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So he said that Ramban does mention that, because you do see that that Abraham went out of his way for love to a tremendous degree. I always had difficulty with that. He got involved in a war against powerful kings, and he was a very small force. And he really risked his life to save Lot. I don't think that your deduction is valid. I think Rashi says...
Was it did something wrong also?
By the way, Nadrin?
He made a mistake, of course, that he took people out of learning that he shouldn't.
Okay. Yeah, but I don't think... I think the Ramban makes it clear that... I think the Ramban makes it clear in this parasha as well that the reason why he did that, I don't know, was because of an emotional leap for Lot. You see, he didn't have an emotional leap for Lot because as soon as...
Because
as soon as that he parted Nemeola,
yes.
As soon as they ran into difficulties, he said, pardon them, Eli, separate from me, and you choose which way you want to go.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make, we differ in philosophy, and it's leading to strife. It's best for us to separate. The reason why, I believe that the Ramban says, but the reason also, one of the reasons why Lot was saved, and the reason why Avram fled, he said the reason why Avram fought for him was because it would have been very, very bad in terms of the system that they were trying to teach the world, that he to follow in the correct path, that God protects the righteous. Because here's a man, Lot, who everybody perceived, he left the city of idolatry, he followed Avram, because to a large extent, he believed in his ideas. So for him to come to harm would have been a terrible thing. See? So therefore, Avram felt obliged that he had to do everything possible to save him, because he was righteous in that respect. He was a tzaddik. And to allow the tzaddik to fall after he's lived a life which demonstrates his belief in the correct ideas would have been a terrible thing. That's why Avram felt he had an obligation. That's what it is. But it doesn't indicate that Avram did it out of emotional need for love. Yeah?
Could you say that?
Question. In other words, the questions are, also, first of all, what's the concept that a person is deserving of death and he's saved because of somebody else's merit? That's a hard idea in justice. I mean, of course, Avi suggested that it's possible that God will save a person. He'll save a person due to the fact that as someone who is righteous, it's part of the yashkacha to someone who is really righteous and wants him. I don't know how far it goes. I can understand that also, Avi. Does that mean when a guy is really inherently chayav misa? That's like a... See, it's different, in other words. When I'm in danger, I'm in a state of danger, and I don't have a merit to save me. But a tzaddik is the spouse for me, and he has the merit, so I'll be saved. That's not an interference with justice. It's not a problem with justice. It's just that I was in a situation of danger, and I wasn't worthy of God's intervention in the natural order. But when one person is chayav misa, or he's chayav kares, when a person is chayav a certain onesh, then I never heard that somebody else's merit can save him, although I could be wrong. There it's a matter of mishpat. In pure mishpat, I never heard that this works. That one person will have a different fate purely because of somebody else. I don't know. That's more problematical. But at all events, I mean, let's see if we can work it out without that idea. And the third question is, given whatever this means, that he saved because of this chesed of Avram, so how does that reflect upon the ability to look back? Rashi is tying it in, that since you're only saved because of Avram, eincha kedai, you're not kedai to look back. Well, what do you mean? See, according to you also, what do you mean he's not kedai to look back? So what is a Rashi? See, according to what Avi is learning, so then who cares if he looks back or not looks back? I mean, you're not kedai, you're a Rashi. You're a Rashi, so why do I care if you look back? You see what I'm saying? I mean, so look back, don't look back. Who cares about you? You're only being saved because of Avram. So you're a Rasha, so why not look back? The looking back doesn't really fit anymore. So, okay. So we heard an answer from Solomon and from Jake. Right? Does anybody want to tie it in, your approach? You're not taking others. Your first step is correct. When it says he's saved for Schus Avram, it doesn't mean literally, in the literal sense. That, one person's schus can protect another person. Ish b'cheto yumas. Each person is judged for his own sin. The person is righteous, he doesn't get punished because of his parents or other people's sins. And if a person is a sinner, he doesn't get rewarded because of their mitzvahs. It doesn't work that way. Each person is judged according to the state of his own deeds, his own soul. That's a little okay. So it's not to be taken literally. So what does it mean? And how does it answer the question? How does it explain why he can't look back?
Well, why he can't look back?
What does it have to do with that? Don't give me a separate explanation.
No,
why. I mean, it's all tied in.
Within this explanation, I can get to how.
I want to say that he wasn't inherently tied to the good. It was only because of Abraham. I believe that's the correct approach over here. But therefore, he still had a connection to the Rishus. And if he looks back, he'll identify with them. But I'm saying perhaps no. Perhaps looking back would have been very good for him. If that's the case. If he had a tie to the Rishus.
You would break that.
There's nothing that can sober up a guy as the destruction. He sees a guy is living a life like a mafioso type, and he's like a wise guy. They call him wise guy. And he's really happy because he's just starting out, he's making quick money, and it seems so easy. And we warned the guy, you're getting caught up into something that's going to overtake you, overwhelm you, and eventually you get into big trouble. Nice, these two slats. Those guys are stupid. They didn't know how to handle it. If you're smart, you know how to handle it, you know. And then he sees a few guys that were just like him, and boom, he comes around the scene, and they're all white, like a whole restaurant full of bodies. And that's him out there. That's a good thing. That might cure him of reality. This is where it is.
I think looking back for love.
Solomon is no longer a chassan. I can differ with him now. Is that so you're saying that he couldn't look back because that's an indication of doubt. But the point of it is, I don't know about that, because he's going to find out anyway that the place was destroyed. In other words, if you're saying you should believe it's going to be destroyed, well, first of all, by the mere fact that he's leaving shows he doesn't have doubt, that he knows he's going to be destroyed. Otherwise, why would he leave? Even if I don't look back, I can control the urge to look back because I know I'm going to find out whether it was destroyed or not. You see what I'm saying? If you're setting up a case where I'm telling it to get on this plane and leave because it's going to be destroyed, and you'll have no way of knowing whether it actually ever was destroyed or not destroyed, right? You see? Then it will be a test. Then looking, the only way you can know is by looking back. And I don't want you to look back because I want you to believe without having to look back. So then that's a good test. But that's not the phenomenon. That's not the case. The case is he knows it's going to... He knows the destruction took place. He's going to find out. I mean, you see right afterwards, they thought they're the only people left in the world. It must have been a tremendous catastrophe. So therefore, there was no... It's seeing of the destruction. It's natural. Rashi says you're not worthy to witness this phenomenon. Not that... Korinthi, which is the opposite. You're too worthy. What you're learning, Shai, is that you're too worthy to... it's unworthy of you to look back. All right, basically, I think you have the general idea. See, I want to say it like this, that what was the difference between Avram and Lot? In other words, Avram was the person that could have looked and witnessed it. It's only Lot that can't witness it. What it means to say is that he's only being saved. Atir Shati Moam, and you're only saved because of the schus of Avram. It means that there are two types of righteous people. One is a person who is righteous because of his own inherent love of the good itself. He relates directly to the good. He relates directly to the true values. And he's not doing it for any other reason. That was Avram. Avram did not have any teacher. The Rambam makes it very clear. He didn't have any teacher. Now, he didn't have any teacher means two things. That first of all, he didn't have any intellectual guidance, but there's also the Gavra, the teacher. And most people, they do not relate directly to true ideas, to the love of knowledge, to the love of the good. The way it works is that you attach yourself to a certain ego ideal. And you want to be like that person. And since the essence of that person is knowledge, so you start to become involved in the world of knowledge. But it's not a direct, inherent relationship to the love of knowledge. It's really you're involved in a certain institution, a certain mechanism of, it's called ego ideal. You want to have a certain image of yourself. You want to have a certain image, and that image, and this is a very good thing, because this image can get distorted. If a person has the wrong image, like many people have today, of being some kind of a rocker or some kind of a cool person or sophisticated, can be very destructive. But when that image is tied to a worthy ideal, so then it's very good, because it gives you a tremendous amount of energy. And it keeps you going to want to learn and improve yourself and do good deeds. That's a necessary thing. But it's not the highest level. Because that's intended to be a means, a medium. Eventually, the person is supposed to become completely involved in the ideas themselves. And he's not doing it anymore to satisfy the ego ideal. So Lot was the... When it says that Lot was only saved because of the merit of Avram, I think that's what it means. That Avram was a tremendous ego ideal for him. And that was the reason, Avraham was the reason for whatever perfection he achieved was indirect, in other words. It wasn't due to the love of the good per se. Of course, you do achieve a recognition of the good to a certain extent, but it was always contingent upon the satisfaction of that part of him, that is to say, the ego idea.
That element, that would be...
That's right. Whereas Avraham was different. Now, how does that... That's the schus of Avraham. That's the way I take the schus of Avraham. Now, what does that have to do with the fact that you can't look back? I think it fits in very well now. Because you have to recognize one thing, that as long as a person is functioning with the idea of attachment to a certain ego ideal. So what he's really looking for is a certain satisfaction of ego. You see, it's an ego thing. And he wants to feel that he's better than others. Why is he doing it? Why is he putting so much energy into this thing? Because this makes him feel good. What even makes him feel good? It makes him feel like he's special, like he's unique. And that always expresses itself in being better than others. See? So you see that this whole mechanism has its drawbacks. Because the person is still involved in the world of ego. And on the ultimate level of perfection, he is not thinking. He doesn't have any energy directed towards the satisfaction of his own ego. All of his energy is directed towards the good. But as I'm saying, it's a double-edged sword. The way man is constructed, he has to go from stage to stage. And until you reach the highest level, each stage has certain advantages, and they're necessary because they propel you. You won't move without this. And at the same time, it has a drawback. So that's the pshat over here. Ein chokadai. For you, it would be bad. Since you're Russia, I think that's what the Jake said very well. Atir Shatima means you still haven't overcome all of your instinctual desires. That's why do you find yourself in a place like this in the first place? Because I'll say he was attracted that not to the Hamas, in other words, to the oppressiveness and the tyranny, that type of thing, the way they mistreated people, that he was completely different. But the sexual looseness and morality, he found that very attractive. So Atar Shatima means that he's not like Avram. He's not on the highest level where all of his energy is directed to the good. So he's still involved because of ego ideal. Therefore, Ein Chokadai, you're not worthy. Because you'll look back, it'll bolster, it'll give a tremendous boost to your ego. And that's a very corrupting thing. You'll feel great. This will only confirm and corroborate all your feelings about yourself. Which is not a good thing. Because you're supposed to be able to keep moving to a higher level. To contain that part of yourself, that you feel you're so special and so unique. But Avram can look back. Because Avram is not involved in that world anymore. He's not doing the good because it makes him feel like he's a better person. That whole mechanism doesn't exist within his mind. He didn't have a teacher. He didn't have a model to follow. He was involved purely in Avraham's Hashem all the time. So therefore, for Avram, he could look back. In fact, Avram would only feel a sense of loss. You see how he felt there. You see, when God told Avraham, I think it's the perfect illustration. So Avram, the average person, would always feel a certain amount of enjoyment. Because of the ego factor, that there's always, when you hear about destruction, you know, people have tremendous curiosity when they hear about a catastrophe. Hear about a catastrophe, a plane crash or an earthquake, there's always a tremendous amount of curiosity. And people always want to see the sight of a big accident.
Yeah, of course.
Now why is it? Of course you always express how terrible and how terrible it is, but there's a certain amount of enjoyment. It makes you feel, you see, better. There's a certain amount of aggression. Oh, it happened to them. And it didn't happen to me. So that confirms your sense that in the ski, you're God's chosen. You're God's chosen. Of course, rationally it doesn't prove anything, but nevertheless, that the underlying satisfaction didn't happen to me. See, this kind of thing could never happen to me. Because God protects me, I'm a very important person. But these people are unimportant. That's the way a person wants to look at it. It fits in with a person's general philosophy of life, wherein the world was basically created for himself. He's the most important person in the scheme of things, and everybody else is really an accident. So you see that Abraham, when Abraham was told about this, he was involved, he viewed the whole matter from the perspective of his Avos Hashem. And therefore, for him, it was a question of where's the mishpat, the knowledge of God, that he prayed for them. Any reaction he would have had on the emotional level would have been sadness. That God, this is God's creation. And that they didn't achieve the true objective. That was his whole life. But Lot would have been corrupted by it. Now, how does this tie in with the... before we go on. The question is, would this give us any insight into the other Rashi that we started out with? The Rashi which says that... here we see, by the way, that in truth, Lot was saved because of his own merit. Even though it says, Chush El Avram, we're saying he deserved to be saved. This is different. This type of a thing, in other words, like what you just explained, that he got his tzitkus from Avram because of Avram, that doesn't mean to say that he's being saved because of Avram. He's being saved because of himself. Because every tzaddik, I mean, every person is a tzaddik. He always has a teacher, always has a rebbe. But that's your merit, that you utilize what you got from your rebbe, you perfect yourself. Because nobody can make somebody else into a tzaddik. Each person has bechira. So Lot, according to this interpretation, Lot was saved because of his own inherent worth. The pasuk merely points out that it was contingent, that he was contingent upon Avraham, but he was still tzaddik. You see what I'm saying? So that resolves that contradiction. There's no longer a contradiction between the one case and the other case. In other words, the first Rashi we did said that it was his own merit, because he took pity on Avraham. This Rashi we said it's because he is chosel shel Avraham and he's a Rasha. Contradiction. So we answered that contradiction. There's no contradiction. Lot is really saved because he had the merit. Except it means that the merit that he had was contingent upon his relationship with Avraham. And that because of that factor, it involved catering to his own sense of greatness, his own ego, and for him to look back, and see the others destroyed and him saved would have been a bad. That's what Rashi says, they're being destroyed and you're viatanitzo. That means you'd have felt that you're special. And that would be very bad for you. Now, the question is though, what about the other Rashi? As far as that business of not giving away the secret. How does that fit into this picture? Does it fit into the picture? What is it? Yeah. In other words, I want to say that it's not because of that particular in and of itself. Because once you have the, you have to realize also that a person who has the mechanism of superego, you see, there's also a tremendous amount of aggression against the father figure. Because behind the whole thing is ego. You see? In other words, the superego really operates because your the real desire is for ego. The aggrandizement of your own ego. And the only way to do so, is you can't, in other words, you can't feel good about yourself because it has to be based upon something. So you have this structure in your mind that you are this great person. And then you have to start acting like this great person. But you have to realize that there's always a desire to overthrow that. There's always a certain amount of aggression, you see? There's always a certain amount of tenseness in the relationship between the student and the teacher. There's always a certain amount of hostility. Because, first of all, instinctually, he's the authority figure. So it's because of him that you have to repress your instinctual desire. That's the first thing. But he's also an obstacle in terms of your own ego. He's a blow to your ego. Because you want to, your real desire is to be the greatest person. And as to the extent that he's greater than you, you have to look up to him. So that prevents you from feeling you're the greatest. You want to overthrow. I mean, the psychological desire of the child is to outdo his father. That's who he measures himself. He wants to be better than his father. The psychological desire of the student is to be greater than the Rebbe. That's an emotion.
So that's why.
So therefore, there's always a certain amount of hostility. See, there's always what you see. In other words, well, it always happens when the Rebbe makes a mistake, or this and that, and a certain laughter, enjoyment. They caught the Rebbe. See, because they brought down the superego. There's a certain amount of hostility against the superego. Now, when does that come out? So I'm saying that in this situation, it doesn't mean literally. I don't think it means like this. That Lot is being praised because he didn't run to Paro and give away the secret. That doesn't fit in with his whole character.
It didn't affect his ego.
That would go against the whole thing. Here's a man. I mean, if you're going to tell me that he's being praised because he didn't run and tell Paro, here's a man that was on a very high level of perfection. He was willing to sacrifice his own well-being, his daughter's, to protect others. So he's going to go and openly have Avraham destroyed. I don't think that's what it means. I think it demonstrates, though, like this, that if that emotion within him was not under control, that he had this hostility, this aggression against the superego, then it can come out in subtle ways. When you're in a certain situation, you see, secrets have a way of coming out. Not coming away, but coming out. It's very, very, it's an amazing thing. Today, you read the papers every day. All different things are coming out about people. And how did it come out? All these secrets. All secrets are coming out. How? If it's such a secret, how is it on the front page of the newspapers? Because people also make a big mistake. You see, all the scandals that you read about in today's paper, like the scandal, the Ginsburg case. I found out that he smoked marijuana when he was a professor. So how do we know about it? It happened to His friends?
Yeah,
we smoked together. Yeah, now the thing is like this. I think this is a good illustration. People make a very... See, the two mistakes people make. When people don't consider, when they do certain actions in a state of emotion, they don't realize the ultimate consequences. Right now, he didn't think. Right? He felt like having a joint for whatever reason. And he didn't think of the consequences that he has a career, and years later, this thing can haunt him. All right. First, you think of the consequences. But I'd say to a certain extent, he probably did think of the consequences. Because he wouldn't have done this. He was a law professor. He would not have done this in a public forum. So therefore, he did it in front of my friends. People make a tremendous mistake about friends. And most of the information that comes out later on that harms people is through friends. It's through friends. Because people love to have the feeling that they have friends. And because this gives them a certain security. Gives them a certain security. But they make a mistake as to who are their true friends. They think that those people whom they get, you know, they enjoy their friendship, they get along with, those are really their friends. But it turns out these very same people do them in. Because they're not true friends. You see, they're just a certain emotional identification. Emotional identification is not a true friend. See, what happens is like this. That you think, you go home and your wife will say, hey, what are you doing in front of him? He's my friend. He could never, I can never imagine this person would harm me in the world. Then we're sure he couldn't. At this stage, we're both on the same level. Then what happens is you get a certain break, a certain promotion. And now you're no longer on the same level. So there's a certain amount of envy. So this guy's not really a friend. When there's envy, so then he wants to bring you down. And he wants to bring you down, so you let somebody slip. When a person has the emotional desire, there are many ways to let a secret out. Therefore, what I'm trying to tell you is that you should be very, very careful who you trust in terms of vital secrets. You should be very, very careful. I would say, if you really think it over, how many people do you know that you would entrust vital information to? I mean, information that could really harm you very seriously. I'd say very few. And you'd be very surprised. Those people who you think you could trust, if you thought about it more carefully, you would see that it's not so simple. Because you're just going by a certain emotion. Oh, we did this together. I can't imagine that this person. You can't imagine, because you were never in that situation. But that's something which you have to be very, very careful about. Now, I would say this is the greatness that's being referred to over here. That Avram was in a situation where Lot could have harmed him. Now, I don't think it means that he's going to run to Paro. But if he had that emotion, he could have let it slip. There are ways to let it slip, and it comes out, oops. You see what I'm saying? Many, that's why you find there's very few secrets, you know, like, something goes on, a family problems, you know, husband and wife, and this, and that, some kind of scam. It's buzzing, the whole shul knows about it. Everybody knows about it, but it's a secret. They had it, because you weren't supposed to tell. Well, each person, you tell them not to tell anybody, right? So each person, they only tell one person. But I only tell that one person because the one I can trust. So each person already is telling one. That person, the whole has one. But the point of it is, though, that there's certain laughters, there's smiles, there's this. There are many, many ways to indicate something without actually telling it. It's very subtle. It's a subtle process. Now, I'm saying is that if Lot was not perfected in this area, even though, of course, he was operating with the mechanism of ego ideal, but if he wasn't perfected to the extent that he had the emotion of aggression under control, that was an act of prayer. Then it could have come out in many, many ways. That's why I'm saying that he was really saved. That fits into the whole picture. He was really saved because of his own merit. But his merit was one which was contingent upon doing the good because of Avram, because of ego ideal. But if that would have been flawed to the extent that he was overpowered by the hatred of the superego, then he wouldn't have been worth it. And that element of perfection was demonstrated in the situation in the triad. Well, he had the information. And he had that information, right? And he had a powerful emotion, there's no way he could have kept it a secret. It would have come out in a subtle way. But since it didn't come out in any subtle way, that showed that within that framework of doing the good because of the superego, he didn't have any flaw. He didn't have the desire to kill the superego. So that's why it was a complete, it was a level. It was a level in and of itself, and for that he merited to be saved. I think that's how the two Rashis fit together, and that's why it explains that element, in other words, is not an end in itself. It's not for that incident in and of itself. But really it's reflective of his entire character. But it fits in with the other Rashi, which says that his tzidkus was one which was contingent upon the model of Avraham Avinu. Okay. Now we're up to Bereishis Yotes. Pasuk Lamed. Right? So it says, Vayal Lot mitzoar, and Lot went up from Soar, Vayeshev Bahar, and he dwelled in the mountain. Ushtei benos avimo, and his two daughters were with him. Ki yari lo sheves mitzoar, because he was afraid to stay in Soar. Vayeshev Bama'ara, and he dwelled in the cave. Who Ushtei benos av? Him and his two daughters. Vatomer avichira latzira avinu zakein. And the older one said to the younger one, our father is old. The ish ein ba'aretz lavo aleinu, and there's no man in the land to come upon us. Kedara kol aretz, in the manner of the world, meaning to say that there's no men from whom they could have children. Lacha nashkes avinu yayin, let us go and give our father wine to drink. V'nishkeva imo, and we will lie with him. V'nechayim avinu zara, and we'll preserve seed from our father. And they gave their father wine on that night. And the elder came, and she lied with her father. And he didn't know when she lied down and when she arose. And it was on the following day. And the elder said to the younger, behold, I lied yesterday with my father. Nashkenu yayin gam halayla. Let us give him wine to drink this night too. Uvoi shichvi imo, and go and lie with him. Unechayim le'avinu zara, and we'll preserve a seed from our father. Vatashkenu gam halayla ahu esavi en yayin. And they gave their father on that night also wine to drink. And the younger one got up and she lied with him. And he did not know when she lied down and when she got up. And the two daughters of Lot conceived from their father. Batelet Abchira Bain, and the elder gave birth to a son, Batikra Shmo Moab, and they called his name Moab. Hu Avi Moab Arayom, he is the father of Moab until this day. Batseira Gamhi Yolda Bain, and the younger one also gave birth to a son, Batikra Shmo Ben Ami, and she called his name Ben Ami, son of my people, son of my nation. Who Avi b'nei Amon arayom. He is the father of Amon, the father of Amon until this day. So basically this is the parsha. The question is, what are the problems or the underlying issues that we should take up? Alright, so Jake says, why did they assume that there was nobody else alive in the world? Okay. And so as Avi says, they're basic, right? Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says like this, v'yish ein bar et tzvuros hayu. They thought Shakala Olam Necharav, that the entire world had been destroyed, Kamel B'Dor HaMavel, as in the Dor HaMavel. So in other words, they saw tremendous destruction. And it appears to them that, well, they tied it in with Dor HaMavel, so apparently they thought that it was a punishment. So it appeared to them that everything was, I mean, on the basis of what they knew and what they saw, they had to go by their judgment. Now, I know what you're saying, so they should have realized that if they were saved, so certainly Avram was saved. Now, I don't know if that's really a taina.
You know what I mean? Talking about, like,
I don't know if that's...
Right. I mean, they're girls. They're not going to...
Yeah, but you can't also... That's true. In other words, that point may have some validity in a theoretical sense, but if you're in a situation, you can't make deductions on that basis. For example, in other words, let's say you were yeshiva with the... during the Holocaust, for example, was taken away. And you have the Rosh Yeshiva was a tremendous, everybody recognized it, great Talmud Chacham on a higher level and so forth. And then after the, then we all get split up. And I'm the only one that's left. You're the only one, whatever it is. And you're not on the highest level. And it appears that everybody was killed. You just happened to escape or survive. So what would you say? I must conclude that the Rosh Yeshiva is alive too, because he's on a higher level than me, and I survived. You see, it doesn't always work that way. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work that way. It's you don't know how the Ashkach is going to work. I mean, certainly we can't. Take a look at the Holocaust. I mean, many people who survived and they weren't tzaddikim at all. In fact, they could have even been wicked. What? Yeah, it can't make. You don't know, but you don't know. Yeah, but tzaddikim, you don't know how the Ashkach works at a given moment. You can't. I don't think anybody has that knowledge. That is part of the Ashkacha. And certainly, if you're in a situation, for example, where you feel you have a very important mission, like you're the only one that's left, and if you're faced with a choice, you have to make a choice right now, that if you don't act, the whole world will be destroyed. God's plan will be destroyed. Right? I don't know if you could say, well, look, I don't have to do anything because I can logically deduce that there must be somebody else left. I don't think that you can work that way. You have to go by the knowns. You can't make these deductions are not part of the known. That's something else. There's Hashkacha. You don't know how Hashkacha relates to Avram at that particular point. How do you know? Moreover, I mean, do you know that the Hashkacha relates to a person on the basis of his level at a given time? So a person could be succumb, go to a lower level. You know what I'm saying? Even at tzaddik, I mean, you don't know. Maybe at a certain time is even on a lower level. So therefore, I don't think that's a valid point. I mean,
so you're giving them credit for assuming.
Basically, the core question over here. It's not clear from the psukim itself. What bothers me in general always bothers me about this. I've done this a number of times. I never felt that I resolved it satisfactorily. And I'm still not sure. Is that it's unusual that the Chumash seems to be very neutral about the whole thing. Usually when the Chumash presents something, especially a serious moral issue, it's quite clear where the Chumash stands, either in praise of a great deed or in condemnation of an evil deed, right? I mean, it's very clear. But here the Chumash seems to be very neutral. It's just like simply a narrative. It doesn't tell you much directly, right? That they did a good thing, it doesn't condemn them. It doesn't praise them. It just tells you the story. What's the point of the whole thing? It doesn't really give you too much of a clue. You're left with the issues yourself. Now, the basic issue is, as Avi points out, objectively speaking, were they doing the correct thing over here? Was it the correct thing to do? If it was the correct thing. On the other hand, if it was not the correct thing to do, so then there should be some indication from the pasuk that it's wrong. There should be some condemnation. So that's I think that's the crux, that's the core issue. It's true. Well, no. It doesn't condemn her for naming it, though. Rashi points out that it was a lack of modesty, right? Yeah, but if that's a split, so the other one should be condemned too. So the other one was a little bit better because she wasn't immodest in the naming. If the deed is a good deed, you know what I'm saying? Let's not reflect. The essential thing over here is not the naming so much as the deed. If the deed is the correct thing, so I'm not so worried about the name. Right? If the deed is wrong, so what? So the younger daughter is to be exonerated because she didn't name him Moab. But the deed is wrong. That's the essential. I think we should go through some of the Mefarshim over here. I'll try and work it out. There's different interpretations. Basically, Rashi and the Ramban. Okay. I'm sorry? That's a good question, in other words, in and of itself. Yep. What's the proper thing to do in a situation like that?
Morally, it's a good thing to perpetuate the...
That's the question, in other words. Yeah, in other words, for example, I don't know, it's a good question, because let's assume the seven Noahide laws, but these are the basic laws which are necessary to preserve society. Now, what about if you're in a situation where the very maintenance of these laws will destroy society? I mean, isn't it conceivable that there should be an exception? In other words, they saw it this, that it was, what's the purpose of the seven Noahide laws? Because it's the will of God that man should exist in a certain state, preservation of society. Correct? So you need these laws. But it's conceivable that there'll come a situation when in order to preserve society, you have to overturn these laws. For example, well, you see in history, the Ramban points it out. We'll soon see the Ramban. Let's just wait for a second. Now let's take a look at Rashi. Let's go through some of the Rashis. Avinu Zaken. So it says, "Vimlo achshav emasai," and if not now, then when? Shemayamos or Yifsuk milaholid.
perhaps he'll die, or he'll become too old to have children. Now it seems in this Rashi that what? That their motivation was for the purpose of having children, with proper motivation. Of course, philosophically you can argue, like Solomon, whether it's correct or not, but their motivation seems to have been for children, not for znus.
If you will.
That's one, that's right, that's what Rashi clearly indicates. Hold on a second. Then Rashi says, V'yish ein baretz. So I read that Rashi. They thought the entire world was destroyed. So again, from their perspective, they were doing the correct thing. Then, take a look at Vatishke Vesaviyah. Here it says, Utsirik Siv, Vatishka Vimo. Here Rashi begins to draw distinctions between the two sisters. And it says by the younger one, Vatishka Vimo. That's different, in other words. You see, in other words, I'm sorry? With regard to the older one, it says, Vatishka Vesaviyah. She slept with her father. With the younger one, it says she slept with him. Now, what's the difference between him with the father? Now, the answer is, though, it's a more blatant. That's right. Chisech, Rashi says. The Torah had consideration for her reputation. It's not such a damning statement, in other words. It's expressing it in a milder form. Why is that? They both did the same thing. So he says, L'fish lo pascha b'znus, because the younger one did not introduce, it wasn't her idea, these nus, the promiscuity. But her sister taught it to her. So the Torah had mercy on her and didn't express her shame. But the elder, Shepascha Biznus, who introduced, who initiated Biznus, Pirsim HaKasav B'mefurash. So the Torah openly publicized it. In other words, it says literally, she slept with her father. That's a condemnation. The other one says she slept with him. It's more of a descriptive thing. It's less condemning. That's one thing that Rashi says. Uvakuma shel bechira nakud. The word uvakuma, which is stated in both cases, that he did not know when she lied down and when she got up. The word uvakuma has a dot over it. And in the Chumash, it's a circle over it. It's a dot. Why is it dotted? To teach her something. Shel bechuma yada. That is to say that when she got up, he did know. And nonetheless, on the second night, he wasn't careful. He didn't guard himself from drinking. Then there's a quotation. I'm Reb Levi. Reb Levi says, anyone who is attached to Arayos, anyone who's attracted to Arayos, meaning Lot. Because why did Lot to choose to live in Sodom? Because he was very much attracted to the lifestyle of Arayos. Lasov, Machilim Oso Mipsaro. In the end, they feed him from his own flesh. In other words, he is his own children. In other words, if that's the end, in the end result, he winds up with his own children. Now, what is... let's continue. Rashi continues this line of thought. Batarena, take a look at Batarena. Afal pi she'ein rishim zaberes mibi rishona. Even though a woman does not become pregnant from the first bia, elu sholto biatzman both siwa vasan lechutz v'nis abu mibi rishona. He's saying that these women manipulated themselves in such a way, their organs, so that they would become pregnant from the first bia. That's a general principle. That's a general principle that Chazal had, that a woman doesn't become pregnant from Bia Rishana. Alright? I'm not concerned about going into that. The point of, as far as we're concerned, what does it indicate? It would seem to indicate that the motivation was not Zinus. You see, what bothered me is that there's two contradictory sets of implications. One implication is Zinus. And one implication is that it was not, it was for a proper... Here you see, Shalto Biatzman. They acted in such a way to ensure that they'd become pregnant right away if their desire was for Znus, so they wouldn't have acted in a way like that. In fact, from the Pasuk, it indicates that they weren't necessarily interested in their father. It says, V'yish ein baritz lovo, then kedar chalaz, there's another man around. If there was another man around, then they wouldn't do it. Again, indicating that the motivation was for the sake of preservation of mankind. Now, let's continue though. Like Moav, Zushalo Haisatsnua, Rashi says, this one that was not modest, Pirsima, Sheme Aviyahu. She proclaimed that it was from her father. Aval Tzeira, but the younger one, Karaso B'losh Nikia. She named him in a proper manner, Nikia, clean expression. In other words, one which did not indicate the fact that she had been impregnated from her father. The Kibbutz Rabbi Me Moshe. And she was rewarded for this later on. I'm not going into that, the facts of the reward. Here again, here you see that according to Rashi, there's a differentiation between the two women. It turns out that there is praise. There is praise for the older one. Excuse me, let me strike that. There's praise for the younger one, and there's condemnation of the older one. But this itself is problematical. It doesn't make no. But the Manasha, if they're doing the right thing, so then why should the older one be condemned? Moreover, she initiated, so that should be praised. I mean, more praiseworthy. She, the right thing to do, so then she's deserving of praise. All right, so the naming seems to be a small thing. This, that, I mean, that's not what? It's not such a terrible, right? No, I'm saying, I'm going to my question. On the other hand, if it's the wrong thing to do, so then the younger one also did it. All right, so she didn't initiate it. She didn't initiate it, and she hid the fact. So she did it. We're taking something which is of secondary importance, the naming, and we're neglecting the essential, the action itself. Moreover, there's further problems over here, because the Lot is condemned. Lot is being condemned because they said he did know. That itself, let's take that itself as a problem. Because the Pasuk says that he did not know. That's what the Pasuk says. But the Nakud indicates that he did know. I mean, that's a very strange thing to begin with. Because it's a funny way of telling us that he did know. In other words, like this, I want to tell you. So I say like this. And he didn't know when she lied down and when she got up. But I really mean to tell you that he did know. So then I put a thought, which is strike that last part. I tell you the thing, and then I say strike it. It's like a very funny way of doing it. So don't say that Torah should have said that he, she said openly. He didn't know when she lied down, but he knew when she got up. That's what Torah should have said. That's the situation. It's a very funny way of telling it. You know, it's like lawyers do. They say something, which I know the judge is going to strike down, right? They say it anyways. You know, why? Because they want the jury to hear it. But that doesn't apply. It doesn't make any sense over here. So there's also, in other words, there's a lot of ambiguity over here. Is it Znus or isn't it Znus? Rashi gives us certain indications that they acted appropriately. That they thought they were the only ones left, and they wanted to preserve the world. And that's what motivated them. And in fact, you see that they were shalt to be Atzman. They conducted themselves physically so that they become pregnant. All that is for the good. On the other hand, we see that this condemnation of the older one, because she initiated biznus. But what means this? It's not biznus. You see? And secondly, and also, with regard to Lot, it's very, very unclear. Chazal also, in general, they criticize him very much, and they point out how terrible drunkenness is, and we say, but why? Why did he have to be made drunk if it was the correct thing to do? Right? And what's that business with the dot? To tell us that he really did know, but nevertheless he did not protect himself from getting drunk the second night. Those are the basic questions. On Lamed Beis, he says, when the Chayim Abinu Zara, Ulai, they were saying perhaps, Kiyamru, because they said, Nasa Anachnu, we'll do the action which is fitting for us. God will have mercy. And we will give birth to a male and a female. And the world will be survived through them. That's a very famous sukkah. Olam chesed yibana. The chesed built the world. Now that statement is used in two senses. One in the sense of the chesed of Avram, compassion, that Avram built the world. He maintained the existence of the world by a system of Torah, which was based on chesed. But the word chesed is also used for a prostitute. The Torah refers to promiscuous behavior as chesed. And Chazal say, Olam chesed yibana, that the world was built through chesed.
through arayos. Because how was society created in the first place? Through arayos. Because Adam, right? They all came from one parent. At one point, brother and sister had to have relations, otherwise there wouldn't have been a world. So Olam Chesed Yibana. Chesed built the world. Right? The same word. So Olam Chesed Yibana. In other words, that the world was built through the practice of incestuous relationships. Otherwise you couldn't have had a world. So apparently, they had something to base themselves on. Because, in other words, once you have a system, once you have a society, so then these things have to be prohibited because they tend to break down the family unit. They're not good for society. But at a certain point, you have to engage in it in order to establish a society. There's no other way to go. So now they were back, according to their view, basically they were back in the original situation. That the entire world was subject to being wiped out. And it's against the will of God, the will of the Creator is that it should be populated. And Olam Chesed Yibana, now we have to do this. That's not a bad argument.
That was before Noah.
And not for Noah did God save us. Now the Ramban says, very important. And they were tznuos, they were modest women. They didn't want to tell their father, that he should marry them. Because Ben Noach is mutter with his daughter. Or the matter was very disgusting. The Aini had Dara Sahain. It was something which was frowned upon in the eyes of those generations. The Lamasas came Meolam, and this was never done. The Chain Rabbi Seinu Bahagados, and also our rabbis in their agadic statements, Maganimus Lot Maod. They degrade Lot very much. They criticize Lot. Lot turns out to be the villain of the whole thing. So the Ramban says that the daughters were tznuos. Let's put it this way. The Ramban clearly, on one point, seems to agree with Rashi that the motivation, he tells you what their motivation was. And Rashi doesn't go against that. If that's the case, so why is Lot to be much degraded? And again, what is the difference between the older daughter and the younger daughter? All right, those are the questions I want to address myself to. I like this. I agree with Avi in the basic approach. I think that according to Rashi, certainly. In other words, there's obviously a person could be doing something which is the correct thing to do objectively. But then the question is, what is the underlying motivation? See, it could be two different things, in other words. You see, for example, in Shemos, at one point when the Jews complained about Mayim, I think it was by the Mara, and Moshe sweetened the waters with the Vayarash and ate the whole business. So Rashi says, what was their faith? What they were asking for was justified. The people can't survive without water. So he says, the way, not that was something else, Lord Pelham. But he says, the way, by Yerivu, the way in which they approached it indicates that the underlying motivation was something else. They had a built-in emotional grievance, and they were looking for cause. And when the cause came along, so they attached their emotion to that cause. But it wasn't. Had they not had that emotion, if it was just for the sake of the water, then they could have gone about it in a different way. There's a proper way to deal with the issue. So I'm saying the same thing over here. In other words, objectively speaking, their argument was a correct one, and their motivation. The only thing is like this, that what triggered off what? In other words, what was the underlying cause? Was it solely for the sake of the ideal itself? Or was it for some other purpose as well, for an emotional purpose? Now I would say like this, with regard to the older daughter, what Rashi's saying is that when she was alone in this situation, and she may not even have been conscious of it, it triggered off a certain emotional desire. It's pasla biznos. You see? It triggered off a certain emotional desire. But of course the emotional cannot be gratified. So it got her involved in the area. And then she found the proper justification, the proper reason. You see? But at the same time, it wasn't purely lishma. At the same time, she indulged herself in the incestuous fulfillment, I would say. That's what it means by paskav biznus. In other words, it's not by accident that she thought of the idea. See, if it's purely an ideal, so then the one who thinks of it first is more praiseworthy. But what caused her to think of it first was the instinct. The instinct aroused the whole mechanism. But once the mechanism was aroused, so then she began to think about the area. And she thought truly, and her arguments were correct. But at the bottom, the whole thing was controlled by the instinct. That's why it says, Vatishka Vesaviyah, that she slept with her father. Because that was the satisfaction that she was seeking. See? In other words, for her... That's why it says that she slept with her father, not just that we're being more tough on her, but that's the pasuk is defining. That's what she really wanted. She really wanted that satisfaction. Of course, she couldn't get that except in the framework where it satisfied an ideal. But it wasn't, and that's why later on, you see that those instincts have been aroused because Moab, she was proud of it. She expressed it. She was very happy about it. Moab, she didn't feel ashamed because in this context, she had a matir. But the point is that had to be an important thing to her. Now the younger one, you see, when she was in that situation, her instincts weren't aroused. She was a tzniut. She was modest. Her instincts weren't, what motivated her was the idea, was the plan. Her sister told her. And when she heard the plan, she saw that it's the rational thing to do. You see? That's why it says, Batishkav Imo. Because for her, it wasn't for the sake of the father. The father was just a means to an end. It's Imo, with him. You know what I mean? It wasn't a direct desire for the father. It was simply an instrument. It was a means to an end. That's why the Torah protected her. And that's why later on, the fact that in the naming, you see, the naming indicates a person's emotions. She covered it up, B'nai Ami. She covered it up because that wasn't the central part over there. That's how I'd explain those descriptions. I'm sorry?
Why they got him drunk?
Why they got him drunk is a good kasha. I would go with the Rambam. I would say that they...
And it's new,
yeah? Right. The Ramban indicates that it would have been mutter, in other words, right?
Right.
But just that it was the practice. People frowned upon it, they looked down upon it. Yeah. So apparently, they did not want to subject Lot to this kind of thing. They thought that he would object, right? They thought that he would object. And they didn't think it was a good idea. There was no need for it. That I would take the Ramban at basically at face value. Let's clear up the issue of whether he knew or didn't know. I think it's clear. In other words, like this. There's different levels of knowing. On the plain level, it wasn't that he was awake. He wasn't fully awake and knew on the conscious level. And then decided to allow himself to get drunk anyways. Because if that's the case, then the Torah would have said it openly. But rather, I would say, you see, there's a certain state where a person can sense certain things already, if he wants to. He's not totally, in other words, he wasn't in a state, there's a state where you have no bechira, where you're totally blacked out, right? This is a state where you're totally awake. It means there's an in-between state, that he was awakened or aroused, it was when she got up, a certain amount, and he had a certain sense, enough that if he was very, very concerned, if he was very careful, he could have protected himself, but he chose not to, he chose to ignore it. You see, he could have justified it in his own mind. Yes, guys.
It was the right thing to do, so why should he have to
present it? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what the state was. I'm saying it was in that state, when he had enough. I just want to clarify what the state was. Then we'll see why it was wrong. You get what I'm saying? That there's a certain state where a person can...
Like you say, in retrospect, I should have known that.
Yeah, you could have known that, because I pointed out to you, when I first thought with you, you're saying, well, I didn't know. And then I pointed out to you, one second, weren't you there, and this and that. In other words, you had all the factors, but your mind refused to put them all together. So you could have known, you should have known. And had you really cared sufficiently, you would not have allowed yourself to get in that situation again. Yeah, because I got into that situation, and I was in that situation, I couldn't do anything about it. But didn't you know, didn't you sense last time? So in other words, there was enough there. There was enough there, that's what it means. But when she got up already, there was enough since he sensed. He could have sensed that if he was really, really sincere, he would have protected himself already. That something was going on over here, and he would not have allowed himself to get drunk again. So therefore, when he allowed himself to get drunk the second time, it was basically because he had a sense of what was coming. And he wanted it. Now, if the thing itself is a good thing, what's the title about this? So what's the answer?
Well, then
The answer is that he's condemned because he refused. You see, he just tried to escape the whole thing. He escaped a rational confrontation with the issue. Because Mamadav Shah, In other words, the girls made a decision. Their decision was that this is what we have to do. And they carry it out according to the best way. The best way is to get him drunk and do it. So if he just, you see, if he just was drunk and totally passive, so he was he's a passive partner in this. He has nothing to do with this. But the point of it is, at a certain point in the thing, he was able to sense. He could have stopped it. So therefore, he did not rationally confront the area. Because with Manushach, he should have thought the thing through. That if this is the right thing to do, so then he shouldn't have had to get drunk. He should have done it in a normal state. And if it's the wrong thing to do, so then you don't do it altogether. So rather than reach a rational resolution, he allowed himself to be in a passive posture to satisfy his title without facing up to moral responsibility. Yeah, he allowed himself to stay in a state of passivity. But one in which he could have his taiva, you see, because it must have been that it catered to his taiva. That's why he allowed himself to get drunk the following night. You see, without having to face up to the moral responsibility, because I didn't really know, that's his imperfection. That's where his imperfection came into the picture. Because if he was, in other words, again, if he was involved for the proper motivation, then he should have faced the issue rationally and said, look, this is what we have to do. There's no need to get drunk over here. You see, why do you have to get drunk? So drunkenness means that there was a tremendous corruption over here. I think it's what Chazal say that it was Lot. Whoever chases after Arayos, the lifestyle rice, in the end they feed him from his own flesh, right? That's Lot. Which means he was being fed from his own flesh, that in the end this is what he really wanted. When a person follows that lifestyle, so it really means he's catering to his primitive sexual wishes. In the end, that's it. The most basic, if you go all the way back, that's the most basic, most primitive form, the incestuous wishes. And that's what he got. So he got what he really wanted. So Lot was to really be condemned. Because he allowed himself to get caught up in a situation where his desires were satisfied without having to face the moral consequences. That's why he's condemned. You see, that's how people get out of a conflict. That's what drunkenness is. Drunkenness is where a person, as somebody mentioned, I studied over in my shul, they like that point very much. In other words, because now somebody said, no. Somebody said, well, maybe he agreed it was the right thing to do, but he could only do it when he was drunk. Somebody said. They said no, because that diminishes the whole value of the thing itself. Because, for example, can you imagine if Avraham Avinu, right before he picked up the knife to sacrifice his life, would have to have a drink first? See? If he'd have to have a drink first, then that's not the same. If the guy has to have a drink first, then he's not doing the thing. The thing is to be able to accept this as being the reality and carry it through. See, the daughters were in a state of consciousness. That you can't argue that way against them. You see, they got their father drunk because they wanted to spare him. They didn't think he would agree or whatever it is. But they themselves weren't drunk. They acted rationally. Shoto biatzman. You see? The only thing is that the older one, it involved the arousal of the incestuous. So she broke down a category while she was trying to do something which was a good thing. The younger one preserved the category. She didn't break down the category. It wasn't that Tishka said, no, what is it? That's what Avi mentioned before. You could do an action which is normally prohibited, right? But you retain the prohibition, right? The category within in your own psyche. You didn't break down the whole category. You see what I'm saying? That's the younger one. By doing it, you're breaking down the category. You're not on the same level anymore. That's the younger one. And that was expressed by the naming. How could you name Ramalav? It means that as a result of the action, the category was broken down. You see? That's what the naming shows. So the carrying out of the action brought it down to a lower level, even though the action might have been permitted philosophically, but in doing so, she gratified certain emotions. So it brought it down to a lower level, and that's why she named him Moab. The name expresses her state of mind. But the younger one, the category wasn't broken down. A person could do an action which normally, for example, a person can eat chaza because they're sick, right? And then they walk away from it, they'll never look at chaza again. It didn't break down the whole category. Or a person can eat it, and now they have a title for it, and it broke down the whole category, and now he's involved in the title. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the difference.
But the naming...
The naming indicates the fact that she's not ashamed anymore. Such a terrible thing. Yeah. Broke down the whole category.